"Welcome to the second episode," he said trepidatiously for fear of being interrupted again.
"Why?"
"Nothing. Nothing's happened off mic."
"We absolutely wouldn't do that."
"Welcome to the second episode of season 3 of We Drunk and We Know Things.
3.2.
We back, baby. That's the new finger gun tagline. Baby, we back, baby." It's not. Oh, God, please. Anyway. So, anyways, second episode, third season, isn't it? Like last week, 2 weeks ago, last month, I don't know anymore. When did we release these?
In the previous episode.
In the previous episode.
Previously, on We're Drunk and We Know Things.
Last time on We're Drunk and We Know Things. I love it.
We should start doing that.
That would be good.
That filler now.
And just like cut in little bits of just us being like, "Fuck you," and stuff. Because to make it sound like we had an argument and then never refer to it. Anyway.
Why don't you sound like Seth Rogen?
Yeah. So, season 3, episode 2. We back, baby. New format. Fresh. Loosey-goosey. Lucy.
Just keeping it rolling.
The loosest of gooses. Gooses.
There is not a looser goose about this hoose.
There isn't. Honestly, if the goose was any looser, it'd just be a tube. Wait.
"That's what I do. I drink. And I know things."
We've had a few beers and we've done an episode already, so we're doing a second one. Last time we talked about Akira at great length, because it's really good and it deserves so. And as such, this week we're talking about Ghost in the Shell, presumably also at great length, because...
Probably a little bit less length, not least of which because it has a little bit less length.
Yeah, and I'm a bit tired now.
Are you?
Yeah, I could have a little nap. I could.
Lots of times.
Yeah, good. But before we get to the good business of talking about Ghost in the Shell, I literally just said that and already forgot, which is worrying because we've got to do a whole episode on it. Let's have a little conversation about what's in the news at this point a month ago. We didn't think this through because it dates very quickly. So, Mandalorian Season 2. There's an FX documentary up on Disney Plus. You should watch it.
All right.
It's really good.
I'm not going to lie. If we're going to make the news, is like, there's a thing about this thing that you'll be excited about.
Yeah, yeah.
Feels barrel scrapey, but carry on.
Yafet Koto's died.
I mean, I've done
Is that good enough for you?
I've done nothing.
Is that good enough for you? Yafet Koto died.
Really? So that's what you got? You got there's a documentary about this thing and this guy died.
I've got two other things, one of which is another person that's died. Yafet Koto died, star of Alien and Live and Let Die. Ledge.
Mr. Big.
He also, God bless him, claimed during his life that he was related to Queen Victoria and he was technically part of the English royal family. Because if he was anything, he was an eccentric. He was quite a legend. But yeah, hell of a life. And a lot of amazing performances. Also died this week is Yasuo Otsuka, who was Hideo Miyazaki's mentor. Mm-hmm. Who worked on Grave of Fireflies and various Lupin TV shows and films and that kind of stuff. But he was very much the mentor. The reason that Miyazaki is who he is because of this man's guidance, as it were. So he passed away at 89 this year as well, which is very sad and relevant to what we're talking about today and were talking about 2 weeks ago. So raise a glass to him, which you can't hear on the podcast, but we are doing so. And in better news, and in further Disney Plus news,
In better news than
the
two beloved talents have died.
Yeah. In better news.
So, news then.
Yeah. It's bad news that they died. It's better news that Jendy Tartakovsky's Clone Wars is coming to Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Because so it's good as hell.
The original Clone Wars.
The original Clone Wars. The Clone Wars that started it all.
And it's not just Clone Wars, is it? They're bringing a whole bunch of... there's some
Ewoksy
stuff.
Yep, so there's the Ewoks caravan of carnival of orgy Ewoks boning.
I don't think it is the caravan. I think it...
Is it Ewoks TV
is
show?
Is it possibly that it's Ewoks?
Ewoks.
As in Ewoks uttered in the same breath as droids.
Yes,
by
indeed,
people
I believe
who were
it
children
is.
In the 80s.
And also they're bringing just the animated segment of the holiday special in, which is the, you know, the...
Boba Fett,
you know, first showing of Boba Fett. So that's coming to Disney Plus as well, randomly. Which is nice, because I guess it will be remastered, I don't know. You'd hope so. Certainly better quality than the stolen holiday special torrents that we've all got. I mean, we don't have... Bootlegged, yeah, sorry, we're cool. Bootlegs, isn't it? It's bootlegs.
Well, it's only stealing if you can buy it.
That's true.
That's not how that works.
No, it's like, okay, but I'm not a lawyer, but all right, yeah. So that's coming. That's really good. And on that note, just a good reminder, just doing, if you're going to watch Jenny Tartakovsky's Clone Wars, just watch Samurai Jack. Because it's fucking best. It's the fucking best.
Right.
Samurai Jack is the fucking best. Also Dexter's Lab. And as a regular citizen will know, this is a regular segment now. I still haven't got a PS5. Because you still can't buy them anywhere. Because
what you could buy instead would be an NFT of a PS5. They're all the rage right now.
Oh, good segue, Rob.
I have literally one thing written down for this segment. I will do better next time.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. So NFT boom madness mania has.
And what does NFT stand for?
A non-fungible token, Mike.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. I was just testing, and you've passed. What does fungible mean? Let's not get into it, it's fine.
I must admit, there is a bit of me that just assumes it's something to do with fungus.
Money is fungible, right?
Yeah. And
but NFTs, not fungible.
So are shiitakes.
Really? Okay.
Athlete's foot.
That's where we go. Athlete's foot, absolutely, yes. Button mushrooms. Good. Yes, very good.
King oysters.
So NFTs, why have they hit the news recently?
Because they're a thing, and because people have started spending ridiculous amounts of money on digitally backed, cryptographically backed goods, except they're not, because it's snake oil bullshit.
Yeah. It's almost the definition of more money than sense.
It is. I mean, every so often, as you're aware, I spend a bit of time in the crypto sphere.
Mm.
Cryptocurrencies are... near and dear to me.
Your bread and butter, if you will.
If you will, if you would. However, there are moments when even I look at the crypto world and be like, you okay, hon? Because this is someone else.
I'm glad you say that, because it was one of those things where I was reading, like, oh, NFTs are in the news. So I read, like, On The Verge or something, like an article about, like, what the fuck is an NFT? So I read this thing and was like, that sounds dumb as hell. And then, like, I was kind of quiet about it because I didn't want to raise it with you or our producer, because you're very knowledgeable about these things and you live in that world. And I thought, oh, if I say that stupid, they're going to, like, explain it to me at great length whilst why they are not stupid. And then you mentioned it and went, no, they're dumb as fuck.
That said...
oh, they're stupid.
That said... they are allowing certain artists to actually kind of cash in massively on dumbness.
Yeah.
So, you know,
good luck to you.
More power to you.
Mate, if you can sell a JPEG for £1.6 million.
90 million or something, I think.
It was an artist called Beeple, and he sold a artwork through Christie's for $69 million.
Good luck to you.
$9 million of that was the fees.
Can we take a moment? 69. Nice.
He's definitely done that on purpose, hasn't he? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so NFTs are a thing. We're going to be tracking the NFT market in future episodes, so we're probably never mentioning it again.
So two things that I found interesting about the NFT market is, the first of all is that DC Comics have banned artists from selling NFTs because they own the rights to the characters. So they say you can't sell an NFT of Batman because I own Batman, bitch. But DC Comics are selling NFT sculptures.
Not sure how they work.
No, nor do I. I guess it's a picture of a sculpture or a computer modelled, anyway, of Batman and various things modelled on the art of a particular artist called Darwin Cook, who is a very beloved figure, because they own the rights to Batman, so they can do whatever they like. However, the widow of this artist, who's obviously passed away, that's why I refer to her as a widow, has said she's not seen a penny, essentially, and it's based off of his original work. So it's a very grey area of... It's just another silly internet weird bullshit thing, and another way for a company to fuck over another artist or whatever, or not, as the case may be for Beeble. The other thing, apparently, is that there's a new thing for the NBA where you can buy NFTs that are GIFs, and these are GIFs of dunks and shots and plays, essentially, in basketball, where you can buy from the owner, from the player, a GIF of them dunking. And this money goes directly to the player, and a lot of it, they own the rights to their own. But this is presumably footage from a television. You know, this has been filmed by a TV network.
Yes, yes. So it's shots of highlight bits that you can trade, but you don't own the rights. So you can't, like, go, oh, I love that dunk of LeBron James, therefore I'm going to buy that and then license that to everyone else.
Yeah.
No, you just own the token for that specific thing.
So it's like a baseball card thing, exactly. A basketball card thing. It's that kind of thing, but digital, and it's becoming this enormous market and another incredible way for NBA players to make even more money. They're from $30 to,
like I said.
Yeah, silly bullshit.
Bullshit.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
I do quite like the idea that, you know, you playing swapsies in the playground because you've got a dunk I need.
But people are buying the first dunk that a junior player has made in the NBA.
Because if he gets big, that dunk's going to be worth something.
They're literally thinking, they're saying it's in terms of like having a Babe Ruth rookie card, that kind of thing, you know? So like it will be worth something one day. But it's a gif of some geezer dunking. It's so weird.
And now if they were dumping.
Dumping. That's a different thing.
They are very fungible.
But yes. So
he broke the bowl. He was so fungible.
So NFTs.
NFTs. We'll be checking in from time to time, mostly because all of these things, the majority of these things, in fact, are distributed via a distributed blockchain of persistence. Which makes them incredibly
blockchain. That thing I still pretend to understand.
It's fine. It means they have an environmental impact and all the rest of it. Yeah. And a lot of people are up in arms about that. The reality is the NFT itself, in most cases, links back to a website.
Yeah.
And that website is just being run by a company.
So when that company goes bust, not a fucking thing.
Your NFT is worth not a fucking thing.
Of course it is. Yeah. Weird. It's very weird. But it's just a flex, right? It's just like the flex of having you own this Beeble JPEG of whatever the fuck the montage is.
Beep.
Sure.
It rhymes with people.
I don't care.
It's beep with an ull on the end.
Oh, right. Okay. So, yeah. So, with all that good stuff out of the way, shall we crack on with episode proper?
Yeah, sure.
Why am I being so professional all of a sudden? I'm having a weird lucid moment during my afternoon drunk.
Are we in the eye of the storm?
It's about to go seriously sideways, guys. Let's get as much of this done as possible.
We do ghost in shell.
We do ghost in shell. In Russia, shell does ghost in you. No, that's not.
We're doing ghost in shell. We're talking about another amazing anime classic. But whereas Akira came from... that's unfair because Ghost in the Shell also came from a manga. Akira came from a manga, stood alone as a shining example of how Japanese animation.
Alone.
Well, a bit. Japanese animation can penetrate the Western market.
Ghost in the Shell is
a dead horse that has been flogged to within an inch of its fucking
apparently,
life.
Apparently, yeah. They do like making a bit of money out of Ghost in the Shell.
Oof.
Yeah.
So
culturally, where to begin?
Well, when was it made?
It was made in 1995, Rob, but it was based on a manga from 1988, the very year that Akira came out.
Probably unrelated.
No, indeed.
However, that
does mean that my long meander through the cultural zeitgeist of late 80s Japan does not need to be repeated because it's born from the same thing. It's born from exactly the same place. The one thing I would say... before we get into like what the title references and all that kind of the philosophical aspects of it, which we'd like to visit, the thing I would say about this is that because of the rise of the salary man in the late 80s, there has been a reading of this film that essentially, because she is the major of the who's the main character of the film, it's weird doing it this way around. We haven't done the plot yet, so
it's fine. We'll get to it.
We're just assuming that everyone has watched this because she is essentially genderless because she got boobs, but she hasn't got any other bits, that she's very much seen as like female empowerment and very much seen as an empowered, a symbol of empowerment. Whereas at the time, men were salary men. They went to work. They were beaten down and exhausted and, you know, people were dying at the desk. That's a very well-documented thing, is that women were seen as a symbol of freedom and empowerment. So they were more... I have lost the word. Relatable.
Okay.
I'm just going to leave you hanging, to be honest. No, fair enough. For these people than for these salary men than characters of their own ilk, essentially. They were a better way to escape reality than they were to...
Hang on a minute, are you saying that animated cinema is a form of escapism realised and hence its popularity?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially at this time, especially with why you see a growing number of female main, very powerful, strong female characters... the sexualization of women aside in anime, let's put that aside for a second. The positive side of it is that there are a lot of strong female leads, essentially, at this kind of time.
I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you,
just
except I will.
Straight into the heavy stuff.
Because she's actually strong to a point, but the patriarchy still outs because she has to be saved several times by a man.
Yeah, and in order to ascend, she needs a dude to do that with.
Yeah,
yeah, indeed.
So
yeah,
yeah. It's a process.
It is.
All right?
And don't forget, this is 1995. This is 26 years ago. So, you know, this is still. When did T2 come out?
I don't know.
Got to be early 90s, right? It was early 90s. So, I mean, you know, you're talking about Sarah Connor and that kind of stuff, like James Cameron, strong female leads. Certainly, Ellen Ripley. Aliens had come out a long time before that and that kind of thing. So. We're inspired by that, I suppose. But yeah, like you say, it is definitely a process. Definitely.
So culturally, we don't have masses to go on. The one thing I would say, and we're not going to get into this right now because we're going to do a quick plot summary, I think. Mm. And it will be a quick plot summary because this film is not very long.
No, it is 82 minutes.
Akira is north of 2 hours.
Yeah, 2 hours.
This is sub-feature length.
Yeah, this is, and I was surprised that it was only like 82 minutes because a fuck of a lot happens. It does also explain the need for... what I do see is somewhat ponderous philosophical exposition at a couple of points where it's like, and now I will give a very long monologue about, I'm stood on a boat and I want to talk about the nature of consciousness and identity. Like, oh, okay, right.
We've all been there, man.
You sure? I mean, look, I've been drunk on the back of a boat talking about identity, sure. Let's be real.
Yeah.
But we should, before we get into the plot, I do want to touch, if I may, on what the title is a reference to. The Ghost in the Machine, which is a reference to Arthur Koestler's 1967 book, which itself is a reference to the philosopher Gilbert Rye's coining of the phrase, which is about the separation of consciousness and the biological of humanity.
We're talking about souls.
We talk about souls. we talk about ghosts. We talk about ghosts. Yeah, we talk about souls. Which is a major theme. Shockingly, a major theme of this movie, which is essentially that the thing I really love about this movie is that it's unremarkable that they are ghosts in machines. It's not explained. It's not labored. It's just taken for granted. They are a brain living in a body, which is a machine, and it's fine. Yeah, the film's not an exploration of that, which we will get into when we talk about the remake and I slate it.
Oh, right. Right.
Okay. Which is an exploration of that because Hollywood and ponderous nonsense. But it's just taken for granted in this, which I think is very refreshing. And I think that's why it succeeds so well, this movie, is that they don't spend 82 minutes being like, but what's her real identity? It's just, no, she is just a brain living a body, and that's fine. That's taken for granted.
I think also, and we'll come on to this when we talk about what this has then gone on to inspire and what have you, it's a lesson that has not been learned, and many filmmakers and TV makers still make the mistake of feeling like we need to spoon-feed you every single fucking element.
It's like the biggest inspiration for The Matrix, which is the whole point of The Matrix, is that ponderous, continual...
Yes, unfortunately, they pondered it.
Yeah.
Not in the first one, which weirdly... Anyway, we'll come to that. The one thing I would also say is that technically, from an animation perspective, we have had people asking if we've allowed our producer out of the doghouse. I mean, he just calls it his house. He will be providing some much-needed insight into what is actually an incredibly technical piece of animation.
Absolutely,
this time, in the face of Akira's traditional hand-drawn approach with minimal CG, Ghost in the Shell has a lot more going on.
I love this new setup because I get to be every inch the film wanker that I am, and somebody else gets to do all the technical stuff.
Well, you do this month.
Next month,
we're doing basket making.
I could learn to do a basket.
What, you're going to take a deep dive into the cultural impact of Wicca?
I'll tell you what, though. The loom. I bet that had a lot. You know, industrial revolution.
Nasty stuff.
It's
you don't want to get... No, honestly.
You'll lose an arm, mate. You take your eye for
an arm, a leg.
Yeah.
Don't you be talking about the loom. That's technical. That's my way. Oh,
Jesus, it's very territorial already.
Right. So, the plot of Ghost in the Shell. We're going to roll straight into it.
Go.
And we're going to do this quick-fire style.
Sure. Well, you're going to try to, and I'm going to interrupt the whole time and make it longer than it should be.
Pretty much how it goes.
Yep.
Major Motoko Kusanagi.
Don't you mean...
The Major.
Tetsuo!
No, the Major, who is the leader of an assault team for Section 9. Uh-huh. Section 9, possibly government? Never really clarified.
No, not really.
Could be private.
There's a Section 6, but otherwise... There's
Section 6 and Section 9.
Yeah, that's all we know.
Also,
yeah.
69.
Nice.
We open with the Major on a mission to assassinate a diplomat of a foreign country.
Yes.
Who is apparently about to defect or something.
Something.
Not massively clear.
All that's important is she's going to shoot him in the head.
She's going to shoot him in the head.
And his head's like wetly
and
explodes.
And she has to shoot him in the head, because if she doesn't shoot him in the head, he could get re-sleeved in another... Oh no, that's a different thing. But it is very much that. Yeah. She has to make sure he's like permadead.
Yeah.
And she does so by using...
Right, William Gibson. What? Nice. Permadead.
Well, this is...
I've never found you more
attractive. Cyberpunk 101, man.
It is.
Akira,
no.
Ghost in the Shell, Neuromancer, come on.
Yeah.
So anyway, she does that, and she does that by taking off all her clothes and then turning invisible, but not before you get good look at the honka honkers.
Is she naked?
Yes.
Because she's wearing a suit in the remake, because obviously she's got your hands and can't be naked.
She's meant to be naked, it's augmented skin.
Yeah, yeah. But she's like I say, she's genderless, right? She's like, but genderless except she's got boobs and nips.
She's got nips, but she... Yeah, this sounds like something that we can't do without being a
She's got nips, but no flaps.
Yeah.
Okay? Okay? You've forced me into a corner and I've said it.
But you kind of wonder why you put them on.
It's true.
They're fundamentally... don't get me wrong, we've got them, but we have them because of a
seemed unnecessary.
A gender split.
I mean, the boobs seem completely unnecessary. No, indeed.
Hmm. Also, they seem like they get in the way.
Honestly, yes.
If you're building a soldier.
Yeah, that's true.
But also...
There's a reason that Amazon's cut one off, you know what I mean?
Really? Right, yeah. So she assassinates the diplomat of a foreign country, and it turns out in one of the many... This is kind of... it's a bit like The West Wing. There's a lot of walk and talk.
There's a lot of walk and talk. For an 80-minute movie, there's a lot of walk and talk.
In the initial walk and talk, we discover that there is a character called the Puppet Master who is hacking shells. And again, none of this is explained, as you said.
He's hacking human brains that are augmented.
Yeah,
if he can get in, he's hacking them.
Effectively, what we learn is that augmentation is a thing. Mm. Some people have a bit, some people have a lot, some people have it all, as in they're entirely shell.
And some are just humans, and then Scarlett Johansson goes to their place and then rubs their lips or something.
No,
oh, no, right.
Stop it. You can talk about Scarlett Johansson in a minute.
So fast.
Right, anyway, so the Puppet Master has the ability to hack shells, a process known as ghost hacking.
Yes. And the ghost is essentially the soul, right?
Yeah.
The ghost is you.
So in other words, he overrides the soul and he takes control of the person.
Yeah.
And the Major and her partner, called Batu, who has augmented eyes.
Yes.
Cool as fuck.
Definitely meant to be like Arnold Schwarzenegger type, right?
Yeah, he's like fully ripped and what have you. Yeah.
Batu's cool as
And they go on the hunt for the Puppet Master, who they have worked out is behind these hacks.
And they very, very matter-of-factly, when they catch these perpetrators of these crimes, they very matter-of-factly go, oh, he's been hacked.
Yeah.
They're like, oh no, like they recognise very quickly that you're hacked. It's like, so they do a thing in this movie where it's all about blinking, right? So they don't blink because they're...
Son of a bitch.
Oh, have I stolen the thing?
No, it's fine. Carry on.
sorry. Yeah, sorry. So anyway, so there's a thing about blinking where if they don't blink, they're essentially dolls.
Ostensibly, what they chose to do was anime animators make a big thing of facial movement and blinking a point.
Yes.
And what they chose to omit was the Major does not blink.
Yeah.
I think she blinks twice in this entire film.
Right, okay. Well, I didn't notice it blink at all, actually.
Yeah, no, it's like super minimal if it's there at all.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I said before about don't say absolutes on the internet?
Yeah.
Hey! She may blink, but I did not spot it. I do not recall.
I'll take the fifth.
Yeah, and it's exactly that, right? Yeah. They use that to model the fact that they've been puppeted.
Yes.
And, you know, if this were a book describing it, it would be like they were ragged around the irises or something,
which
or whatever.
Which is why there are certain characters that have been puppeted that wear sunglasses and things like that, so their eyes are shaded, and
Sorry, it's fine. They chase down a number of leads there, and they find a bunch of individuals that have been ghost hacked.
Yes.
But they're useless to them. And then...
The trash guys, by the way. They're amazing. That is an incredible sequence. And he's like got a picture of himself, and he's convinced it's a picture of his daughter. It's so heartbreaking. That he's got to keep phoning because he thinks his wife is going to give birth. And he's phoning to hack into the system, but he thinks he's phoning the hospital to make sure his wife is okay. It's heartbreaking. It's fantastic.
He doesn't have a wife.
Yeah, he lives in a bachelor. Yeah, incredible. Oh. Incredible conceit, yeah.
Turns out they're getting nowhere. They're doing some cool shit, by the way.
Yep.
And dancing around in like flooded parts of the city.
Yep.
The city, by the way, flooded. This is kind of semi-canon. Because of a completely not mentioned typhoon that was meant to have hit the city beforehand.
Oh, really?
So it comes up in other stuff.
It's standing water that essentially is
basically
still there because
it was flooded, hence it's quite wet.
And is that people going back and explaining away something? And presumably in the first film, it was just a really cool thing that they did.
Yeah.
Because it looks cool and it's animated, and then they went back and explained it away.
Yeah, pretty much. I like the enriching of a universe.
I like the enriching of the universe. I don't like explaining away of cool stuff.
They're not explaining it away because presumably there was a whole bit where they then had a massive like fight in a typhoon and it was cool. So they added more cool stuff and the cool stuff reinforces canon.
Now you've introduced the concept of a fight in a typhoon.
All right.
I'll allow it. Because I'm apparently the anime police, having watched two this week.
And you've got some books on order.
Yeah, I've got some books on the way. I know what I'm doing.
Watch out, Japan.
Yeah.
Mickey D's coming for your culture.
Entitled wanker, Jesus Christ.
Right, anyway. Before we get too down on ourselves, we're just enjoying something that's fundamentally something we enjoy. Maybe let's keep our opinions to ourselves, but other than that, let's have them and put them on the internet. Yeah. The Puppet Master has taken over a fabrication centre where they build fully augmented bodies.
Yes.
And has built himself a body.
Nice, as one does.
Yeah, the body escapes.
It does.
And gets hit by a truck.
Is that the blonde lady?
Yeah.
The blonde lady.
Who also has unnecessarily large
boobs. Unnecessary nips, yeah. Unnecessary boobs, in fact.
Unnecessarily large boobs, I was going to say.
Indeed,
but,
yeah, indeed.
The body escapes, it's hit by a truck, and then gets picked up by Section 9.
Yes.
It turns out...
I talk like this, and I am called Project 2571.
Yes.
And also, I'm now going to spend 4 minutes talking about the nature of reality. And I'm not an AI, but also philosophy. Have you heard about Descartes?
Pretty much that happens for a bit. Yeah. I must admit, that's normally when I go and make a cup of tea.
I like that bit.
It's a good bit.
Yeah, it's a good bit.
It's a good bit for one very specific reason that I'll come on to in a minute.
This is one of the few movies where a character will just... There'll just be a shot of a character who just goes, and now, exposition and really heavy-handed pop philosophy. And I go, this is cool as fuck.
All right, crack on. You've got 5 minutes max. Come on, we're on
the
clock here.
What the fuck is this? Skip. No, in this, I'm like... Yeah, that legless blonde lady's got a point about consciousness.
Just to be clear, not drunk. Actually physically lost her legs in the truck crash.
They put her in a suit bag at one point.
Well, this is what happened. Section 6 show up.
Yeah.
And they've got somebody who's got, bioadaptive camouflage or whatever they call it.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
They attack the lab and they steal the puppet master. Put her in... Basically a suit carrier, and then chuck her in a boot.
It's very funny, yeah.
We then get some cool, like, it with a tracking dart.
No, because they shoot it with a tracking dart because he uses an old school gun.
Yeah.
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 He's low tech, baby.
He's like Murtar.
Yeah, he is. It's just been revoked. Your inability to be tracked.
He may or may not be too old for this shit. He's not determined how old
Free
he is.
South Africa, you dumb son of a bitch. Anyway, sorry. I thought we were just doing lethal weapon
diplomatic immunity. So they then track the...
Why have we never done lethal weapon? Anyway, sorry, go on.
I think we probably just found out. Next time we do a film, which will be in about 18 months, we can do lethal weapon.
Anyway, yes. So
they track the puppet master's
and she goes to the
puppet
thing, and there's a room, and it's got a tree in it, and it's like a family tree of some variety, but there's like a car, and she's like, I can see the body of the puppet master in a suit bag in the car.
And he's like,
but
wait.
What she then sees with her super eyes is there's also a big old spider tank on top, but the spider tank is invisible.
Fucking spider then- tank! Spider tank is the best thing.
Spider tank is awesome.
Love the spider tank.
Spider tank is awesome.
In fact, I have here, the major wants to connect with it, but finds that it has been protected by a spider tank.
Yeah.
Awesomeness ensues.
She goes to tear the top off, and like all the muscles like pop well, this off is it. Her body
she
and stuff.
You know so tries like, and fails yeah. to disable yeah, the spider yeah, tank because yeah, yeah. she rips an arm off.
Coolest bit for a minute in the remake when they actually do that, where the muscles pop out of Scarlett Johansson's back and all that kind of stuff, but then she succeeds.
Yeah,
and you're like, oh no, you've oh good, you've missed the point of this film again.
mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Probably but should have succeeded, but anyway, she's saved by Batu, who arrives just in the nick of time.
With a big fucking gun, with a BFG.
A very big gun.
You think he literally calls it just, what is that? It's a really big gun.
Yeah. but he carries it, apparently he carries it around in the trunk of his car, just in case.
Yeah, they owe him one or something, so yeah.
So he disables the tank, and the Major is able to join with the Puppet Master. Cue a bit more navel-gazy exposition-y stuff.
He basically talks about how being an AI means the limitations of being being an artificial life form means that he doesn't understand life and death, and he
wants
doesn't
to
understand
die.
Procreation. He wants to die,
and
he wants to
presumably get jiggy with it.
He wants to, he wants his act of dying. He wants to merge with the Major so that they can create a new life form, and so that his act of dying has some meaning.
Which is super, except they're completely blanked out. Meanwhile, Batu has just realised that Section 6 have shown up.
Yeah.
And Section 6 are trying to kill them all.
Yeah.
So Batu manages to throw himself over the Major's head, effectively, to preserve her brain, which now contains the Puppet Master.
Well, contains both of them.
Well, both of them merged and what have you.
And then
she
wakes up and she's a little girl.
Then we get, cut to new creepy schoolgirl body.
You know, now this is some of the lesser parts of anime that I enjoy, which is the fixation with schoolgirls. It's like the whole Sakura thing from Street Fighter.
Yeah.
Do we need to see her panties every time she kicks? No, but that's certainly the way she's animated.
And it's going to sell an awful lot of copies of this game.
Absolutely.
So.
No, absolutely. But she's a little girl now.
It's not necessarily sexualized. It is weird because she is clearly still
definitely a sexual component to it. It's not sexualized, but there's definitely. But anyway,
all right. Yeah. Well, she's a schoolgirl who is on a screen.
Yes.
That's as far as they go. She doesn't get her tits out. Nobody hits on her.
No, fair enough.
So yeah, the choice of that representation. Fair enough. Read into it what you want.
But also, I suppose it's there. It's meant
she's
to be
not,
their child.
She's not giggling and getting standing over a vent with an updraft.
No, indeed. But I suppose she's meant to be their child, right? So she's
kinda
a child, I guess.
It's weird.
Yeah.
A bit creepy. Made a bit more creepy by the fact that she's clearly still the Major / the Puppet Master and speaks in an adult voice, which is very weird. Done.
Wow, it really is that.
That's
then,
it. It's
then,
that short.
Done, yeah.
But
Batu's still a badass at the end.
Yeah, total. He survives, by the way. You're not sure at the end of the scene where he throws himself, because he gets shot a lot.
Yeah.
If he was in Akira, he'd be fucking minced.
But that's the thing, right? They're meant to be so augmented that they're not augmented anymore. They are just cyborgs.
Well, this is the point, is that she is a cyborg, and this is the whole bit on the back of a boat swimming with a very cool can of beer.
With like the cool San Miguel.
Filipino San Miguel.
Filipino San Miguel. With the really awesome changing perspective of the background. It's incredible. Which our producer will no doubt come to later when he talks about that. I fucking love it, Rob. So thank you, Rob, for that very considered and articulate plot summary. We're still in the eye.
You're very welcome. No, I don't think you are.
We're still I think we've crossed.
Right, nobody knows what the hell we're talking about. So let's quickly summarize. The eye is a state that some of you may have encountered where you start out maybe a bit hungover, a bit drunk, and then for some reason something happens and you hit a moment of total and utter clarity. Professionalism reigns.
I've experienced that for the last 40 minutes.
You are convinced that you could drive, you could probably run the government.
I think I could design a house.
Yeah. All of these things are possible within reach. However,
I think I could do a professional architect's job of designing a house.
However, it is the eye, and it is short-lived.
It is. My lucidity is slipping away from me like a... No. I'm just saying no, because I just, the joke I was going to make is no.
No,
I've still got
that,
enough lucidity that was going to be good. Okay, so, so yes, plot. That was done. We did it. That was good.
We've done it. Yeah, it was so, it was cool.
Yeah, right. That was great. It was a great plot. It is a great plot.
How did they make it?
Well, are we doing homage first? Are we doing how they make it first?
Let's do how they made it first, because the homage is going to go on for hours.
If we don't do how they make it first, then we've got to let him speak, because if he doesn't speak, now...
Well, no, I also think it would be more logical to talk about some of the technical production behind it.
I think we've let him speak for the first time, and now he's got a real ego on him, and now we've got a real diva on our hands. And our producer here, Lady Gaga.
Hello.
More like Lady... Ha ha, no. Maybe Nana? You know what?
Just maybe take a beat.
Yeah, don't right. Stay in the eye of the storm too long.
So. Wrong on many levels, considering the nature of what we're talking about. Right, so I know a shit ton about how this was made because it's one of my favourite animes.
And I know about it because I'm doing it for a podcast, so I've read about it this week.
So we're going to test you.
But for those that don't know, why don't you tell us, baby?
Well, no, Rob, you go ahead and we'll see what I can fill in the blanks.
So every two things you say, you have to say one thing that's a lie, Rob. And then we'll see if he knows. It was made by bears.
Correct.
Dogs can't look up.
Also correct. How therefore, your next one is a lie. Related.
So they made it like this. Also, dogs can't look up. Yeah, we are very much past that moment of lucidity, haven't we?
Fundamentally, this was a much richer animation experience. It combined hand-drawn, obviously.
Yep.
But also, there was a lot more CGI. There was a lot more post-production comp. As Mike alluded to in the opening, they did absolutely jizz all over Avid for editing and post-production.
Yeah,
I believe I jizzed all over that in the previous episode.
Earlier.
Earlier today, yes.
No, earlier, yeah. As in before now.
You assumed that someone listening now also listened to the previous episode.
I don't think anybody...
This doesn't go out live.
We should do that.
No, we shouldn't.
So, yes, Rob, your point is well made. Yeah, they basically, when we were talking about Akira, it was all hand-drawn in a very traditional, there is not really a computerized element in the workflow for the edit.
Apart from all the computers.
Yeah, but they were...
I'm messing with you, dude.
They were into... Yeah. The computer's
new to this. You can tell he's new to this.
But the artwork wasn't digitized. It was just... Well, they used the computer as a tool as opposed to digitizing the art and then manipulating it.
And it wasn't part of the mastering process or part of the animation flow.
Yeah, so whereas Ghost in the Shell, they termed it as digital generation, generated animation. Where,
DGA.
Which they... It's literally the
that
only...
spells
it's
Degas.
It's the only time it's kind of used for any film because now it's become the normal way of doing animation.
What's funny is that in all the things I read, for some reason, and it must have been copy and pasted from some original article, is that every article I read about it said, which was considered to be the future of animation. Literally those words. DGA, which was considered to be the future of animation in every single thing.
You
I
trace
read,
it back to the book written by the guy who invented DGA.
Exactly. Somebody's...
Well, so, to be fair, if you went to someone who just learnt animation from scratch today, they wouldn't... consider doing it in any other way.
So is this was the future animation. This is how it's done.
So whereas now you'd probably draw
computers.
Everything. Whereas now you draw
computers are quite big in animation nowadays.
No, the way that it was invented for this, but this is the way it's done now.
Now you would draw the elements digitally and then be able to manipulate them.
Sure. Okay.
This they still hand drew the elements
and then scan them in,
but then digitize them. But they also digitize the audio at the same time, all into, as
can
you
I,
said,
can
Avid.
I just say a point upon the digitization?
Yeah.
Is that when I watch the making of production video, which is like from 1995, which you should watch just because of the 1995-ness of it.
So it's
all.
Like
it's
a
incredible.
Scanned VHS.
It's really amazing.
Or something.
Are they all smoking?
No, it is a geezer sat next to a scanner, a flatbed scanner, smoking a fag, just putting cells onto a scanner, closing a lid and pressing a button. And then next one. The digitization process, like, what you mean, the geezer with the flatbed scammer? So funny. Yeah. So funny.
So, yeah, as you said, they used Avid, which is like a non-linear editing system, computer-based, which, again, traditionally with animation you wouldn't do. You'd literally just have the rolls of cellulose and you were taking images that way.
Or photocopies or whatever.
But it allowed them to easily, like, skip around and, like, sort out the edit, even though they kind of had the storyboards and the animation already done. But they used this system called Tima, which, again...
Tima.
Yeah, T-I-M-A.
Sorry, so, you mean Tima!
Tima! So it was a piece of software that obviously can probably now be replicated on your phone if you wanted, but it, at the time, allowed them to do a bunch of stuff that when you watch Ghost in the Shell becomes apparent that only Ghost in the Shell did that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's
so
things,
like her camouflage.
So things like
that.
The camouflage, instead of like hand animated which bits are going invisible and refracting at certain times, the software would just pick elements of a cell and be able to like morph it within parameters.
So that's it. So it would work in conjunction with the background, right? So you'd have the background of the city and then you'd have her outline essentially moving towards the camera, but it would warp the background image.
Yeah, so instead of like just only changing the cell of the major, if we're talking about her, it would use what was the background cell as well, which previously you'd have to hand animate it. It would like stupidly complex. They also used it...
Which is funny, because when we were talking about Akira before, they just drew that.
Yeah, but they did it...
And this is only 7 years later.
But they did it the other way around. They used the computer to give them an idea of what to draw, whereas they drew something and then the computer did the work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they basically could reshape elements in a frame, but also the software could pick out elements that they wanted to. So there was some kind of nice...
So from what I understand, the lighting, like, for example, in traditional anime, you're either lit or you're not. It's very hard to do the gradation of lighting, the gradient of lighting from light to dark.
Because you'd be shining.
You have to physically draw it.
Because you'd be shining a light through the cellulose as well.
Yeah, so you physically have to draw it and you have to shine a light through the cellulose. So because of Tima, it meant that they had that blend. So like that scene, for example, where she's in the water, where she fights the guy that's after the
guy with the Uzis.
Yeah, the guy with the Uzis. Yeah, the guy with the sunglasses. That the lighting in that is all done through Tima.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they'd have to fucking draw different shades of skin colour and everything. You know,
I mean, the other thing that's a bit more obvious is...
It started articulate and ended drunk.
The other thing
I think we are firmly outside of the eye.
The other thing that's a bit more obvious is whenever you see like a computer display or like from a point of view of one of the characters who's augmented and it's like really digitally displayed, knowing that was computer generated now, it's obvious to pick it out. But then you'd be like, well, that would have taken someone ages to draw.
So that's they said there were three layers, right? So there's like the cell animation, there's the CG animation, and then there's the animation as the brain interprets it or as the brain sees it. So they had to think about like how to interpret a car being tracked on a map and in the future. So it looks cool, it's green, and it's, you know, it looks like it. But then also how it would look inside the major's head, that she wouldn't see that map. It would be a thought inside her head. And they then had to animate how that would appear.
Yes,
which
is... It's an imagining
like a
of
wonderfully
like
the only an animator kind
yeah,
of,
like the
yeah.
user interface of that bit of
yeah,
software.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the really cool thing about it when you watch it, it doesn't seem out of place. Whereas when you watch some of, as probably you guys are going to talk about, the sequels, there's a massive disconnect between like that CG, because they tried to over polish it and they tried to make more cutting edge for when it was made. Rather than this, it looks like it was shot at the same time as the video of the characters would have been.
Sure, yeah.
So it blends really well.
The CG in this is, as much as it's integral to the production process in a way that it's not in Akira, it is still complementary rather than a driving force.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And that's something that you're absolutely right, we are going to talk about, and I'm going to lambast lightly when we come to the 2.0.
Because it definitely does become a point with anime, with all film, in fact, of the effects of the point, right?
Yeah, so it's called the entire Avengers series.
Well, exactly. Effects are meant to be complementary, as you say, as opposed to, oh, I I agree. And I mean, that is, there is a place for that kind of cinema where it's spectacle, but weirdly, for a science fiction anime movie about a robot lady who's fighting a super hacker, weirdly, this is a philosophical, what I would consider like a proper film. This is a proper film.
There's a question of purity to the underlying medium, I think. Yeah. And yeah, it's something that, again, based on when this came out...
That's very interesting, actually, because the underlying medium, I mean, the design of the underlying medium is vastly different. So it's very, almost what I would call cheesecake. So the design of the characters is very different, very big, buxom. I was going to do the winky eye thing. I was going to show you the, you know, like they do in Pokemon and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That kind of traditional anime, very exaggerated faces and that kind of stuff. That's what the manga is like.
Ah.
The manga is very much a traditional, whilst it's got the philosophical concepts of the film, it's stylistically very much...
Trad.
Trad, yeah, very much so. So in the film, that's this, Hiroyuki Okiura, who is the key animator and character designer and was on Akira as well, as I said in the previous one, he redesigned the whole aesthetic of the look. So whilst it's carrying over the philosophical aspects and the story elements, it's changing entirely.
This is throwaway, and we will move on shortly, but it's a cheap shot. Would you say that he reimagined it and he thought, you know what? Can make this look a bit more like Akira and it would be better.
Pretty much, yeah.
You know, run home to mama.
Well, that's not a
I suppose it's
throwaway. I think that's a throwaway.
You hire artists to do what they do,
yeah.
And this particular
artist...
There's
a reason that guy got the job, right?
Yeah, all right.
Oh, you did that, yeah.
Thank you very much, Mr. Producer.
Yes, very interesting. Thank you very much.
Whilst Akira could be held up as the godfather of... modern anime.
It's the Godfather. It's the Godfather.
Really? He's just hearing words and reacting to them.
It's my impression of, yeah, it's monkey see, monkey do at this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
arguably, Ghost in the Shell has a more direct and traceable legacy.
Okay.
Not least of which, because...
it's got 25 fucking sequels.
Right. So, we have got...
I see where you're going now.
The Ghost
in
the Shell series. Are you ready for this?
I am.
We start, and this is chronologically in, like, plot order. If you want them the other way around, it's going to take a lot longer because I've got the dates at the end.
Right, okay.
So we start with Ghost in the Shell Arise.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a series of five
right.
OVAs, or yes. Original Video Animations. We have Ghost of Pain.
That answers the question. I couldn't understand what OVA was the whole time, but okay.
OVA.
Yeah.
It's egg in Latin.
No. Yeah, oh, yeah. It is, yeah.
No, we have Ghost Pain, which was released in 2013. Ghost Whisper was released in 2013. Ghost Tears, 2014. Ghost Stands Alone, 2014. Mm. Pyrophoric Cult.
Pyrophoric Cult! Yeah!
Was released in 2015. And these were all kind of TV movies. They had limited... the first four had limited theatrical releases, and they all came after 1995. So, yeah. But before. We then have... fuck me, this gets confusing.
Sure.
We then have Ghost in the Shell, the new movie.
Right.
Now, you might be mistaken for thinking that's a sequel to Ghost in the Shell.
No, but that's the beginning of Arise, right?
No. Chronologically, it actually happens after the rest of the Arise stuff.
But it's the first Arise continuity film.
No, the first Arise continuity film was Border One, Ghost Pain.
Well, I agree to disagree.
Have you watched it?
No, I haven't watched it. I haven't watched it. I've read about it. I'm just busting balls.
Okay, so the new movie released in 2015.
Yes.
We then have chronologically Ghost in the Shell, which is what we're talking about today.
Right.
Ghost in the Shell. Then
this is
had,
the Ghost in the Shell chronology, not
yes.
actual time chronology.
Ghost in the Shell then had some additional sequels, including an animated series or. They're all animated, but a series called Standalone Complex, or SAC.
Which is like a procedural show set before the actual, like, her time during Section 9, right?
Well, actually, it's set after. That was released in 2002 to 2005.
Oh, yeah, right.
And then we have Ghost in the Shell 2.
So Ghost in the Shell Innocence.
Ghost in the Shell 2, Innocence.
Right, so that is a sequel.
That is an actual sequel.
But he says it's not a sequel, but it is a sequel because it's the same continuity, it's the same characters, and in the middle there's Sack, the standalone complex.
The first Sack.
It stands alone, apart from all the continuity it's got attached to it.
Then you have Ghost in the Shell, Standalone Complex, Solid State, which was another TV series that was actually made in 2006.
So that's not the Netflix one, then?
That,
so that's 2045, no, Standalone Complex 2045.
And because at this point, the horse isn't quite dead yet, but we can keep flogging it, they then made Ghost in the Shell Sack 2045, right, which was the new Netflix
that's
one.
That's a Netflix one, okay. So that's the one I took one look at the trailer and was like, this animation is horrible, I don't want to watch it.
So we have Ghost in the Shell, Ghost in the Shell the new movie, and Ghost in the Shell 2.0, only one of which is a sequel. We also have Ghost in the Shell 2.
Yeah.
Ghost in the Shell 2 is not a sequel.
But
it's
not
a
Ghost
remaster.
In the Shell 2.0.
A remaster of the original Ghost in the Shell.
With new sound effect, new gun effects, and...
They redubbed the entire soundtrack.
So he basically... Because the original director, the director of this, made the first one, made Ghost in the Shell Innocence.
And Ghost in the Shell 2 Innocence in
2004. And so when he made Ghost in the Shell Innocence, he then went back and redid Ghost in the Shell because he wanted to update the aesthetic to match Innocence.
Ghost in the Shell 2.0.
Yes, yes, indeed, yeah, yeah.
Which was released in 2008.
Yeah.
And actually... It has a couple of things going for it.
Yeah.
The dub is really good.
Yeah.
Because they redubbed.
Just hardcore pornography.
The English dub is just like... however, they replace a whole bunch of stuff with 2008 CGI.
Oh, the best CGI.
It could be a lot worse. But it could also be a lot better. Oh, well, and you could just...
You say it could be worse, and I raise you the movie Appleseed.
They could have just left it the fuck alone, to be honest.
Cause... Remember when that came out? Everyone was like, oh, this is going to be amazing. And then we watched it and we're like, oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God. My eyes.
The big thing about 1995 original Ghost in the Shell is nobody was complaining that the animation needed improving.
No. No, absolutely. And that's the thing it's lauded for. Yeah, you know that thing everyone loves about this film? I'm gonna go change it. What's he got? A bad case of the George Lucas's?
A little bit.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
He stops just short of introducing a musical number.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Yeah, no, it's that.
You mean
kind
it
of...
doesn't have a number with the greatest music genre of all time?
Jizz. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Fucking George Lucas.
Oh,
Jesus Christ!
Been rewatching Star Wars with my wife and. I must admit, we got to Return of the Jedi, and I was quite excited because I was like, this is the end of that original saga. And I'd forgotten that they dropped that in.
It is funny. It is funny when you're like, you're back in the... it's the original trilogy. You're back,
back in Jabba's palace.
I'm comfortable. Wait, what is this? That close-up in the guy's mouth with this... What the fuck is...
She gave me a look, and all I could do was shake my head. Anyway, so that's the Ghost in the Shell universe as is.
The curse of being married to us, isn't it? The curse of being married to us is watching Star Wars, and then every now and then we just go, well, that's different again.
Right, hang on a minute. Sorry, just to be clear.
That's not the crate dragon noise he made in the original curse.
Just to be clear, he fucked this up. I fucked this up in the DVD release.
When that Mandalorian episode came out, you texted me and said, does the crate dragon noise it makes in the Mandalorian match the crate dragon noise he makes in the new Disney cut? And I was just like, I hate us so much. Yes.
Fuck's sake.
It does. And I hate us so much.
Anyway. So, that is the entire series. And bear in mind that a whole bunch of this stuff, most of Arise and all of the Sack stuff, are actually series.
It's not the only one, is it, though?
Then we come on to the live-action remake starring Hollywood's darling Scarlett Johansson.
I could have watched anything. I could have watched anything, Rob. I could have watched anything. I could have watched any of those that you just mentioned. I could have watched 2.0. I could have watched Innocence, which I'm actually interested to watch. But instead, I watched the 2017 Rupert Wyatt, director of fucking something about Snow White and the Huntsman or whatever the fuck.
Oh, God, he did that.
He did Snow White and the Huntsman,
Did he do the sequel?
And that's it. And then TV and then adverts, Gucci adverts and shit. And so I watched the Scarlett Johansson because my wife loves Black Widow in The Avengers. And she loves Scarlett Johansson. So we were like, hey, let's watch this. It's fucking horseshit, Rob. It's fucking horseshit. is so bad.
I must admit, I watched it when it came out. I don't remember it being terrible, but equally, I don't really remember it at all.
I think it suffered that I'd watched Ghost in the Shell the night before. I shouldn't have watched one of the great masterpieces of anime and then watched its Hollywood remake the next night. That probably didn't give it a lot of chances. However,
in a nutshell, what was wrong with it?
To put it in a real soundbite, there's no soul. They took the soul out of it. They took all the intelligence out of it. All of everything's explained. It's this very pat story about, oh, and then it turns out that actually she was this person all along, and the puppet master was her sort of brother mate, and they were, but they were anti-technology people. Oh, and then they were made thing, and boo. And it's all very Hollywood. It's what we were talking about before, what I was saying about before, that I won't go on about, but my lack of understanding because I'm not Japanese. I don't understand that culture. That, but then that person made a film going, yeah, I understand this. It's fine. I can do this movie. And then they made a film out of it, and they put Scarlett Johansson in it, who at the end turns out that she was Japanese all along. But when they made a perfect, when they made a perfect body, it looked like a white woman. In Japan, a Japanese company, we're like, hey, we need to make a perfect body. Let's make it look like a white woman. It just is very weird. It's very weird.
But no nips.
But no nips. No nips. And she's in a suit this time. She's not naked. But it just no. And like the acting is awful. She is Scarlett Johansson is a good actress. She is awful in this. It borrows a lot of stuff like from Innocence, for example, the geisha robots and stuff like that. Like that's
Like the geisha robots.
I like the geisha robots too. I think that's a really cool concept.
That sounds bad.
I also think it's a cool concept borrowed from something else. So everything in it that's good is borrowed from something else. So the scene where she fights the guy in the water that we were talking about before is awesome because it's almost a shot-for-shot remake of the anime. So it's really cool because it's cool in the anime. Everything that it borrows is great. Everything that it is original in massive inverted commas is TV of the week.
Okay.
Yeah, they looked at the various Ghost in the Shell movies and picked scenes that would be cool.
The one thing I get is
it looks good. And
I don't think it does.
And the practical design, like you can go and watch how they built
Stuff. Fair.
Practical.
That's very fair. That's
fair. Is really well done.
The thing I would say about I agree, the practical effects are great, and they are like the tangible stuff is really nice. The thing that I would say is that, you know, in Blade Runner when they're flying around and it's like the massive geisha lady advertising Pan Am, right? And it's amazing because she's massive and it's so good. Because they constantly film the city from so high that everything feels small. So the great thing I love about the original Ghost in the Shell is the feeling of claustrophobia that they're enveloped by this Hong Kong city, right? It feels lived in and it feels big. But they take that away in the Hollywood one where it just feels very small and it feels all of the shots are, look how big this city is from really high up and look how many holograms there are. Everything's a fucking hologram. There's a guy catching a ball and everything's an advert. And they've taken that good stuff from Blade Runner and they've just turned it up to 11 and it just feels cheap and doesn't look good. So, it doesn't have a sense of scale.
So what you're saying is you didn't like it.
What I'm saying is I didn't like it. And in our next episode, I'm going to spend an hour explaining why I didn't like it.
Tune in for We're Drunk and We Know Things After Hours.
The real issue is that I watched that movie that's like, hey, yay, we're Ghost in the Shell, we're Blade Runner, we're doing all this stuff. These are our inspirations. But it doesn't feel like he understood any of those things.
To be fair, that is not his fault.
Well,
his parents called him Rupert. Right. Anyway, so Ghost in the Shell. Then
wait. I've got 20 more minutes.
Click.
Do you know what is a better live action version of that story?
Go on.
Season 3 of Westworld.
God damn it. This is all part of you trying to get me to watch season 3. I'm going to watch it.
I'm going to watch it. And then tell me I'm wrong.
No, that's fine.
I mean, don't get me wrong, he's not wrong, but he has missed the fact that there is a legitimate live-action remake.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I will tell you, I'm not watching Banshee. I'm not watching it.
No, there is a legitimate live-action remake right. that is inspired by a line to the story and the fundamentals.
Okay.
It's Driving Miss Daisy.
God damn it! I hate you so much. God, two episodes. Twice in 2 hours. I hate you so much.
I mean, we totally record these apart. Anyway.
I mean, yeah.
So, in terms of what it then went on to inspire.
All of James Cameron.
Sure. All of it?
Yeah, most of it. I mean, he was already getting there anyway, let's be real. But I think it's inspired, a lot of it is inspired by James Cameron, like, industrial, military complex, like, big, beefy machinery of aliens. But then I think James Cameron saw this and then took that as though it's a cyclical thing.
All right. The big one we've already talked about, The Matrix, literally the Wachowskis are on record as saying they watched Ghost in the Shell.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we just want to make that, but real.
But that's the thing, like any neo-noir, so Dark City, Batman Begins, any of that kind of stuff, anything that's like neo-noir, dark kind of, Ghost in the Shell, Blade Runner, these are the aesthetic we're looking for.
Yeah, that's an aesthetic alignment. I would say direct.
Oh, direct is
influence.
Yeah, The Matrix is insane.
The Matrix is like, we're going to do this.
The original, the opening scene of The Matrix where Trinity is escaping from the agents, her escape and the way she lands and things like that, that's shot for shot. Like, the way she lands, you know when she jumps between buildings and she lands and she cracks the piece of building she's on? Yeah. That's shot for shot, right?
Literally, yes. Anyway, other stuff. There must be some. There's loads.
There's a million things.
There's tons. All right. So that.
But that, I mean, that, I think that's the thing is like there's. The Matrix is the most direct one, but this is because it's so formative, so in such an important movie that there are so many things. So like Dollhouse, like that Joss Whedon TV show, for example, is like very much inspired by this. Joss Whedon's problematic nature aside, like, you know, the TV show.
Recently disclosed problematic nature.
No, indeed, but the TV show and that kind of stuff, like, what's that fucking movie with Elijah Dushku? The TV show, A Dark Angel?
Yeah.
It was a James Cameron production, right? So that's James Cameron doing Ghost in the Shell as a TV show. And
Elijah
kind of
Dushku doing Ghost in the Shell again.
Dushku doing Elijah Dushku, as she does, you know.
Was it
Jessica
Alba?
Was it Jessica Alba?
Yeah.
Was it really? In Dark Angel?
First role, yeah.
Wow.
Where she met Tony D'Nozzo from NCIS.
Tony D'Nozzo.
Right. One of the interesting things.
Oh, that wasn't interesting?
No.
Jessica Alba. Okay, fair enough.
No, Tony D'Nozzo.
Tony D'Nozzo from NCIS.
Oh, fucking hell.
Great character.
One of the interesting things that I discovered that I haven't really vetted was that apparently Ghost in the Shell is not particularly heavily rated in Japan.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not. Akira is held up on a pedestal as a pinnacle of that particular art form. Mm-hmm. Ghost in the Shell, much, much more popular in the West.
Really?
That probably explains why they managed to make 11, count them, variants on the sequel, not including a live-action piece of crap.
Wow.
So, yeah. And that, I suppose, goes back to what I was saying last time about the fact that there was this breaking wave.
Yeah.
And I think this film probably represents the wave breaking, it's done.
So it's not made for a Japanese audience, it's made for an international audience?
I don't know if it was made for, I obviously can't speak to that at all, because you know, it wasn't there, didn't make it. But in terms of reception, I think maybe Japanese cinema had moved on.
Interesting.
They were looking for different things.
I
would have hoped you'd have dug this up in your cultural research, but, you know.
All right, well, this is a weird way to shame me, but okay.
Yeah. I'm glad
we've taken this moment to shame me that I've not done this.
In all fairness, I didn't either. Should have done it.
I had read that it wasn't as well received in Japan as it was as it is in isn't held in the same regard as it is in the West. Do you think that it has a more Western sensibility than other anime made at the same time? So if you look at what else was coming out at that time, Perfect Blue, Fist of North Star. There was various Miyazaki. Do you think there was a certain... I mean, Miyazaki was massive in the mid-90s, so do you think there was a certain love affair with Miyazaki, so this was shunned a little bit more, that this was a bygone era? So this is a manga from 1988, don't forget. So Maybe it was that. Maybe it was Japan was beyond that. Maybe they'd move past it.
I think it's like anything. The trend ebbs and flows, and the two films are very much of a type.
Mm. Mm.
That,
yes.
You know, pseudo post apocalyptic. Cityscape, futurist. All of these.
They
words.
Do feel 7 years apart. They do still feel like twins.
And
bit.
To be honest, maybe 7 years was enough. Yeah. The Japanese were looking for something else. And don't get me wrong, it wasn't unsuccessful.
Sure.
It was, however, much, much more successful in the West.
So those sequels then we're talking about presumably were made to cater to Western audiences rather than Japanese audiences because they were a little bit over it, maybe.
Well, SAC 2045 is a Netflix production.
Right? Well, yeah.
I think it also found an audience because of the birth of the internet. You know, you had this plot of this interconnected world, and you know this concept of a personality surviving online, like digitally, and that was around the time that a lot of people were future gazing from what the world.
I mean, that Puppet Master, he literally is a cloud intelligence, right? He exists on the cloud, and that's it. And that his point is he wants.
Which is, to be fair, the only problem I have with this movie is that it suggests that there is any kind of intelligence on the internet whatsoever. And on that note, this has been We're Drunk and We Know Things. We've been recording We've been recording in Mike's back garden. We've been drinking all things to all supplied by JB's Brewhouse. Whilst we can't be there, because we're only allowed to be there for 2.5 hours and we have to eat the entire time.
And eating is cheating.
Not their fault, by the way. This is wonderful government restrictions,
yes,
which are there to keep us safe. So we will do as we're told. Mm. We will absolutely be back in 2 weeks' time when we will have something completely different. Because this is season 3, man.
Do whatever we want.
There ain't no rules.
Loosey-goosey.
Loosey-goosey. Let's never say loosey-goosey again.
I've said it more today than I've in my life. Thank you, Daddy.
Hello.
No, I thought it would be funny to start calling you Daddy as a bit, that I think about it, no, I don't think I'm going to.
It's not funny when you do it in real life. No, it's definitely not funny when you do it on the internet.
Don't make it a thing.
You don't want Daddy Likes.
Please don't make it a thing.
Daddy Like you can have. You're calling him Daddy.
Don't make it a thing.
When you're Daddy.
You describe me as Daddy's favourite.
Mike, I wouldn't ever describe you as any kind of favourite.
I don't care.
So moving on to that, Mike, anything else?
No, I think that's it for news.
Whoa. Have you found a PS5 yet?
We already did that
bit. No, and I did that bit.
Just need to clarify.
But no, I still have not got a PS5. I just want a digital version. I don't need the disc drive. I just want a digital version.
Have a GIF of somebody else playing it.
Who in their right mind these days would go in for a physical media type situation? Not me. I'm a man of the future. I haven't got thousands of discs in my house at all. So, you know, what kind of nutter would... I just haven't got space to be buying games, let's be real.
What if I told you I could sell you a NFT-backed picture of a PS5?
Can I play Assassin's Creed Valhalla on it?
No, but you could tweet about that NFT picture.
Well, it's all
of
about the
flex,
as I say. So yeah,
and then sell the NFT of that tweet.
It's all about Valhalla and Miles Morales, so if I can't do that, I'm not really interested, if I'm honest.
That's understandable.
Welcome to... what now? What now?
You've got to wait for the fist and then the finger.
God damn it. How is it that I'm the professional one in this version? I don't know what's happening.
You can always wait for the finger, Mike.
No, I'm always. That's why I sit down so gingerly. Who speaks first? You speak first?
You do.
I speak first.
You do. It's your turn. I did the last one.
I'm quoting your favourite film. Force Awakens. You know your favourite film, Force Awakens. Who speaks first? You speak first? I'm going to make a really long joke at the beginning of the film about a... holding for somebody on the phone, even
that's not
though
the Force
it's the
Awakens.
No, that's Last Jedi. Even I'm like, wait, do they have phones and the hold button? Is that a thing in Star Wars? Is that a thing? Anyway.
You know, we've had this conversation. If you cut out all of the humour, that film gets a lot better.
No, not all of it. The best bit's the Canto Bight bit. Can't buy it. When they go to like the casino world, that's the best bit.
Okay, but again, amazing social commentary. If you cut out the dwarf played by,
Simon
Pegg doesn't play him.
No, it is somebody famous, isn't
it? It's Warwick. Warwick Davis plays the little alien that tries to put money in BB-8.
Yes.
It does nothing. It adds nothing apart from allows BB-8 to then use that money as a machine gun.
He spits out. Like that.
Also, how long was he sat there waiting for this dude to just load him up?
Yeah, I get it.
Fucking stupid.
So this week we're doing Last Jedi, apparently.
Again, we're relitigating.
Yeah. And it's exactly the same conversation. I still like it, Rob still doesn't.
Ah, but now I have more reason.
But now I've had time to think about why I hate it so much. Just because I told a funny story about a cock and balls doesn't mean that I'm not serious, Mike, still.
I think we might be touching the other side of the eye.
We're approaching the other side of the eye. We're touching cloth, I believe, is the... No, wait.